This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
From our 901 Mission Street studios, you are listening to the San Francisco Chronicle.
Hello, Heather Knight, and welcome to the hardest I have ever laughed on a podcast, maybe ever.
I think there was one part where we were both crying. We were laughing so hard.
Yes, this is the Daniel Handler podcast. I cannot believe we've never had him on any of our various podcasts over the years up till now, and it did not disappoint. Let's set the scene. We're at Green Apple Books, Heather.
Yes, Green Apple Books was gracious enough to host us in their philosophy nook. I had never been there. It's like such a maze in there. I discover new sections all the time, but I'd never made my way to the upstairs side door down the hall philosophy nook. So we set up there with Daniel Handler, and there's a disco ball there. There's a weird painting of an old man that nobody knows who he is, that they got at Goodwill. There's just a lot of random stuff. And the best part was there were all those announcements over the loudspeaker.
Yeah.
Throughout the podcast. Kevin, line one, Kevin.
I love, too, that the wonderful Green Apple staff, very accommodating, but they're bringing in this hodgepodge of furniture from, like, the 1930s to the 1970s and setting up. At one point, they set up a desk, like, sideways that served as Daniel Handler's desk, and then he's got this old chair, and the desk is a little too small, so it looked like he was, like, maybe in like a first grader or second grader classroom or something like that, which he seemed to really lean into because he's such a funny guy. He's like super well-dressed sitting on this way too short chair with a way, way too short desk. And we're taking photos of him. And the fun just went from there.
I think he was probably our best dressed guest ever. Don't you think?
I think maybe. I mean, Rennell brought it, you know, the other people have brought it, but he may be right up there. John Travolta, you weren't there for that one. He came pretty sharp, but a tie, if not the best. I've made a list of things from this episode that I want on every podcast. Number one, the Green Apple intercom that kept interrupting us and was a source for a lot of humor. Maybe we could just pipe the Green Apple intercom into the Chronicle archive, and when we go back to recording here, we can just have Green Apple's announcements in the Chronicle basement.
Yeah, or maybe we can pipe them into the newsroom and not take any credit for it and just see how annoyed we can make our coworkers.
I like that. Super long lightning round. Heather, you administered the lightning round, and it's like, it's more than a third of the episode, and it's like just the source of all the best humor. So listen until the end. The lightning round is excellent.
He admitted there was nothing lightning about this lightning round, but it was still very funny.
And we've already mentioned another thing I want in every episode, putting our guests behind way too small furniture and taking photos of them. And finally, accordion and swimming talk. Apparently, we're going swimming. We've been shamed into it.
Yes. Although he says if I bring my wetsuit, I'm a dilettante. So I don't know. I still might be a dilettante and bring that wetsuit.
Yeah. So a lot of fun in this episode. I was thinking as we ended it, we have to have him on again. And then I realized we are having him on again. Total SF Book Club. This is a promotion for our Total SF Book Club, which is coming up in about a month.
Yes. So in case listeners are not aware, we recently partnered with Green Apple and the San Francisco Public Library for a quarterly Total SF Book Club, choosing books written by authors from San Francisco or about San Francisco. And Our summer pick is The End of the Golden Gate, which is essays by local writers about how they chose to stay in San Francisco or leave it. And on August 24th, the library is hosting us with Gary Camilla and Daniel Handler, two contributors to the book. So sign up on the library's events page, August 24th, 7 p.m.
Yeah, it's on the San Francisco Public Library event page. And this is going to be super fun. It's a virtual event. It's going to be our last virtual event.
No more virtual events.
Yeah, it's our last one with this book club. But it's still going to be a ton of fun. We're hoping to get some accordion music in there.
Maybe. Daniel Handler did promise to bring his accordion.
He did. It was a promise. Norton the Itzit will be there virtually. And we'll have our drinks with Nick. We're going to have a themed drink again. Look for that on our Twitter feed. I know some people are getting tired of virtual events. If you're going to do one more, make this your last virtual event. And then just burn your computer. It's all over.
Yeah, who needs it anymore? I did not know Norton was a member of our book club.
Norton the Itzit, yeah, he is a member of our book club. He will be behind me at some point during the proceedings.
With your son Theo being paid $1 a minute.
Yeah, I think it's gone up to $1.50 now. But yeah, inflation, minimum wage is going up. One more event. We got another event even before that. We're about a week away from our Total SF movie night, and that's on July 15th at the Balboa Theater in San Francisco. San Andreas, Heather, and I think I have you excited about it.
Yes, I've never seen it. I think this is the first movie night we've had where I've not seen the movie before. So I am excited. I'm a big fan of The Rock, Dwayne Johnson. Our bagpiper will be there. Norton, of course, will be there. Pre-party in the parklet outside at 5. Watch the movie inside with a beer, popcorn, and an Itzit at 7. And it'll be super fun.
Yeah, the pre-party is going to be great. I mean, they're going to be selling merchandise and beer and Itzits out there. You can get food and come by. You don't need to drink. But we're going to have a good time beforehand. And I'm just really excited for this movie. If you're on the fence, I can guarantee you're going to have a good time being around people again. I think it's going to feel really good. So again, tickets at www.cinemasf.com.
Woohoo!
Well, Daniel Handler is coming up in the Philosophy Nook with Green Apple announcements. I'm Peter Hartlob here with Heather Knight, and this is Total SF.
Thank you very much.
Daniel Handler, welcome to our Total SF podcast and
Thank you.
Philosophy Nook at Green Apple Books.
It is my delight to be here, eyeing all of the philosophy.
You are sitting under the used philosophy sign as we speak.
One can presume that people read the philosophy and then it completely transformed their life and they were in no need of any further encouragement. And so then they sold it back.
Yes. Well, there's a lot to buy if anybody's in the market.
Yeah, it's reasonably priced, too.
I've never been in this nook, but I was wondering, you grew up in the city. Do you remember your first time visiting Green Apple Books, and how often are you here?
I could not possibly remember my first time. I don't remember a time when I was not aware of Green Apple Books.
Yeah.
And this is my second visit this week, and it's Wednesday.
Oh, wow. So. That's impressive.
Yeah, pretty often is when I'm here.
You're home away from home.
Yeah, I mean, it's been responsible for my education in some degree since I was young.
Yeah.
And it was, when I was young, it was the cheapest bookstore.
Oh.
So then you could really, if you were subsisting on an allowance. And by subsisting, I mean not paying for food, clothing, shelter, or any other necessity. Then you could come here and get, The Master and Margarita and the Rainbow for really cheap.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I love the fact that for my life, I could not, on this piece of paper in front of me, draw a floor plan. And I've been here hundreds of times. It's like the old Steinhardt Aquarium. It's just like you kind of make a turn and you're like, oh, I've never been here before.
Yeah. The room where we're in is a frequent a mishap for me. And then it's a reminder. I think, gosh, I haven't read a good book of philosophy in some time. Let's look at them together.
And then do you buy one?
Sometimes, yeah. I one of my few ethics in life is that you can't enter a used independent bookstore and leave without buying something. I think that's a sin.
Yes.
So whenever I'm doing an event, I make sure that the audience knows that. They don't have to buy my book if they don't want to, but they have to buy something.
That's a great,
yeah.
great piece of philosophy.
There you go.
I love a little twist on this podcast, too, is that this is open to the public right now. So, and we'll share a photo, but you are on a microphone in the corner, and anybody can walk in and just buy a philosophy book, and Daniel Handler will be sitting there on this yeah. little desk.
I don't know what the morning philosophy crowd is in the Richmond. Someone woke up this morning and was like, gosh, where's that Walter Benjamin? Have I lost it? Ugh, what time is it? Is Green Apple open?
Well, you're a San Francisco native. Do you have a first San Francisco memory? Not necessarily your first memory, but your first San Francisco memory.
I mean, I guess it depends what you mean, but I remember that the first time I went to Boston, that in my head, Boston was going to be like San Francisco because they were also, I don't know, small cities and by the water and whatever. And having a new appreciation for the uniqueness of San Francisco. Mm.
Yeah.
So I definitely spent kind of my adolescence and even kind of college years and early 20s saying, like, a medium-sized city is what I like to live in, a medium-sized city like San Francisco. And it's like, yeah, well, visit Pittsburgh for a little bit and then decide if you can live in any medium-sized city. Nothing personal to Pittsburgh, but yeah. just it's. But I think it was a slow process of learning how unique it was. Mm-hmm. It was a slow process of having people visit and visiting other places, you know, and having people say, like, this is the most beautiful place that I've ever stood on in my life, and have it be like a fairly nondescript hill in mm-hmm. San Francisco. It happened to me last night. A friend is in from out of town, and we walked near my house to Corona Heights, which is like kind of no one's favorite park in mm-hmm. San Francisco, I would say. And it's spectacular. And she was like, oh my God, you live near here. You know, and I was like, yeah, that's true. I should appreciate that more when I'm walking my dog.
Yeah. Isn't that the hill where the gingerbread monolith was built over Christmas? Do you remember that?
I'm not aware of the gingerbread monolith.
Did you miss the gingerbread monolith?
Yeah. Oh,
wow, this is San Francisco.
The ways
history.
Of Gentiles are often strange to me, so this could be the explanation. But
right around Christmas, somebody constructed out of gingerbread this really tall, like over 6 or 7 feet.
Like a 2001 Space Odyssey kind mm-hmm. of monolith?
Yeah. Exactly.
Wow.
And then everyone went to visit it, and then dogs started having their way with this
yeah.
thing, and it crumbled overnight. But it was quite the San Francisco.
Yeah, I'm sorry I missed that. I was right here. I wasn't anywhere.
You lived in other places. You lived in New York for a while. What kept bringing
that was
you...
the list of other places I've lived.
Well, you went to college.
I went to college on the East Coast, too.
Yeah, yeah. Was there ever a thought of, I'm going to be there, I'm going to be, even as an author, you know, strategically, like, I'm going to live somewhere else, and kind of what brought you back here?
Well, I married a New England woman, so certainly when we moved together to New York, she's from a family where you live in Manhattan and until you have a child, and then you move to Long Island, or if you're a rebel, Connecticut. And so that's kind of what I thought was maybe going to happen. But also I did a really, I mean, I'm a big propagandist for San Francisco too. So when she and I were first dating, we spent a summer here, and I pretended that every spectacular thing I took her to was like a thing I'd stumbled upon. You know, like, oh, I'm hungry. Let's have some dumplings right here. Or like, could you use a little pick-me-up? Let's like just stop by Cafe Trieste. We'll have an espresso.
No big thing.
I'll go here sometimes. You know, and so everything was like the most spectacular version. And then I just kept saying, like, I'll live anywhere. It doesn't matter to me.
Oh, look.
Yeah.
There's Paul Kantner from Jefferson Airplane.
Yeah, he
what
seems
a surprise.
To be enjoying the, you know, ginger salad at Mandalay Burmese restaurant. But I'll live any place. Anywhere where there's great Burmese food is fine with me. And then when we lived in New York, we knew pretty instantaneously that we would leave when we could.
Going back to your childhood in the city.
Yeah.
Did you read a lot, and what were your favorite kids' books?
I read a ton. I read a lot of the Bay Area's own Zilpha Keatley Snyder. I read a lot of Roald Dahl. It will surprise no one to hear. I read a lot of Beverly Cleary. But I had just a fantastic few librarians at the West Portal branch who just put things in my hands all the time. Mm-hmm. A lot of which I don't remember because when you're a kid, particularly then, now there's more media about children's literature and I think young people are more kind of attuned to that. But at the time, I didn't know anything about, I just liked reading them. Mm-hmm. And they were great. They put books in my hands and then they kind of led me to the adult section when it was time to graduate from the children's section.
Did you grow up in West Portal?
Near West Portal, yeah. Uh-huh.
Cool. And what was your favorite local bookstore? Was it this one or did you go to others?
There was a local bookstore in the Stonestown. It was before it was the Galleria. There was a local bookstore in Stonestown that I went to. But I came here a lot. My father took me to City Lights.
Yeah.
I still don't have a favorite. There's ones that I frequent more often, mm-hmm. but that's more a logistic and convenient issue. But, I'm a heavy, heavy visitor of bookstores. Nice. Previously, the only thing that kind of prevented me buying as many books as I wanted was a financial limit that was mine when I was young. And that, by, a strange quirk of fate, has been removed. And so now,
you're not subsisting on an allowance
anymore. Yeah, well, now it's just like, if it feels like if I'm immune to heroin addiction, how much heroin can I take? And so, yeah, I'm here this morning. I won't leave without buying a book. And I'm meeting a friend later this afternoon at City Lights. So. I should just tell my credit card company now. So they say, gosh, it really looks like fraud. Who visits two bookstores in a day?
Well, we're doing a horrible job of promoting our book club and our book club pick, The End of the Golden Gate. And you contribute an essay and you're comparing your 20-year marriage to Lisa Brown, to your longtime love of San Francisco in the book, ties into the themes of your 2019 book, Bottle Grove. You conclude with a couple of great lines. I'm going to read them. I'm more excited about my new book than old work, and I'm eager to see what will happen in my city rather than yearning for how it was. I want to stay here another 20 years at least, married to Lisa Brown, watching all this and writing it down. Why are you so optimistic about San Francisco and committing to it when a lot of people are doing the opposite right now?
I think I've been here because I've been here for so long that I hear a lot of complaint about things that have happened with San Francisco that use a relatively recent arrival as a starting point. And so I don't mean to downgrade serious worries about what is happening in the city, for sure. But I think in terms of kind of the everyday griping about San Francisco among locals tends to be, this perfect place that was right near my place that was here 3 years ago when I moved is now closed. Yeah. Like the whole city, everything's terrible. And I think, I think with issues of inequality and schooling and policing and homelessness and really large issues occupy my worries, but the kind of everyday change of the personality of the city, I feel waxes and wanes. And so I think just because I've been here for so long that so many places have the ghost of what used to be there and what was there before that, and what was there before that. And so I think I feel more like a bystander than someone who's trying to fight against the general flow of how things go.
Yeah. I miss things too, but there are new things that show up that I love. And we get a little bit of blowback because when Heather and I do stuff together, Heather writes very serious articles and explores some of the biggest issues of the city. When we're together, we're celebrating the city. We use the word celebrate now, which journalists, that was hard for a while. But I don't feel apologetic for it because I feel like I'm counter-programming this idea that it's all over. Golden era is done. And it's like, we're always looking in the rearview mirror and saying the golden era is done.
And kind of, going through life, you have to have a certain amount of commitment to joy and happiness, no matter what your circumstances are. Mm-hmm. There's so many people in this city who are not complaining about what seems like the most obvious things to complain about, that I don't have a lot of patience for that. But, and you could just say that over, you know, every day you want to celebrate something, it's someone's worst day and there's great suffering someplace, you know, and we're not going to like refuse to enjoy our dim sum until there's peace and justice throughout the whole land.
Well, some people want you to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, but then you know that they order the dim sum and they eat it at home while watching a sitcom and they're happy as clams.
Yeah.
So I can't.
Yeah, literally every time I post a picture on Twitter of our adventures, like we're on like a beautiful hilltop like you described, or
Corona Heights, yeah, we've been there.
An amazing bookstore. Somebody inevitably says, go to the Tenderloin and put a picture of that there. I'm like, I go there a lot. That doesn't mean we can only talk about it.
Yeah, well, that's just the like profile of online life,
yeah,
right? Is that you? So many people's feeds, you look at it, and half of it is, how can this person enjoy this thing while this horrible thing is going on? And the other half is like, I love grape soda.
It's a very nuanced discussion. Yeah.
Jeff, 41, thanks.
I'm leaving that in.
Yeah.
I'm not editing that out of the podcast.
Yeah, there's no rush. There's no rush.
That's what we're going to play right before we go to our break. Yeah. We'll play that right there.
I'm just thinking, like, I had an instinctive, like, no rush. I'm not paying attention to that then. Yeah.
We'll be right back after this short break.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, nothing but bad segues in this podcast. I want to talk about swimming because I listened to your City Arts and Lectures with your sister and Rebecca Handler. And it was about swimming in an aquatic park. That's something new that you and your sister did. Can you, number one, tell us how that started? And number two, just sell us, because we've been flirting with the idea of swimming in the ocean.
Oh, as a got total it. I mean, come on, this is your gig. You have to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not going to sell. I'm going to shame you into it. That's how my people do things. Well, it came a little bit out of grief. My father died, and my sister and I discovered that we both had a secret hankering always to try swimming in the bay. And I was swimming laps at the JCC pool, as I was doing then, pretty regularly. And there was something about my father dying and then knowing that there was this other possibility. And I got out, I swam my last lap, and I thought, what am I waiting for? I want to do this thing. It's available to me. I'm going to go and do it. And previously I'd said, oh, I bet it's really cold and it's so far away from where I live and it's going to be like a whole thing. And then I thought, that is the worst excuse for not swimming in the ocean that I've ever heard in my life. And so my sister and I took a class that the Dolphin Club offered, which was a hilarious class, which basically consisted of like, this is what a towel is and remember to eat and like have a warm beverage with you. And then we got into the water and I loved it instantly. It was really, really cold. No, wetsuits are frowned upon at the Dolphin Club.
Gosh.
They're the sign of a dilettante and a weakling. And so you wear a little cap and a suit. Some people wear wetsuits, but not very many. And I mean, it's very hard to talk about without sounding like a damn hippie. But you know, you're swimming in the thing that the planet is mostly made of, and you feel in touch with something enormous. And then also, you, particularly when it's quite cold, you have to leave your head a little bit. You can't really think about stuff because you got to do it. And then you get out and you go into this beautiful wooden WPA building and you sit in the sauna and you get warm. And it's now an irreplaceable part of my life for sure. And when the club, of course, shut down for COVID and it felt like it was going to be the last thing that was open. You know, I just felt like a sauna full of old guys is like, and it's got to be the last thing. And so my sister and I bought a little wacky device that pressurizes hot water so that we could kind of spray each other as we got out of the water, and we changed in our cars and we kept swimming all through the,
wow,
the
how
pandemic.
How often do you do that?
I do it most mornings.
Wow.
Yeah.
Your life sounds good. Swimming in the bay and going to bookstores.
It's a pretty good life. I don't have a great basis for complaint, which isn't to say I never complain, but yeah, I never thought my life would be as magical as it is, for sure.
Well, I exercise with headphones on, like this morning, and what I realize about swimming is getting in the situation. I'm going to be alone with my own thoughts for the first time in a long time, certainly exercising, which is kind of scary to me.
But, yeah.
It's probably a good place for me to be.
I mean, it is a kind of spiritual experience. I don't think you can get around kind of being confronted with your own self and your own body and your own mind when you're doing it, which is pretty magical. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you have hit the nail on the head of why I don't really get to hear a lot of podcasts, because I'm self-employed, so I have no commute, and then I exercise in the water, and so I don't have these big spaces of time where everyone else is listening to stuff. Yeah. I just have to fake it. Oh, yeah, no, I heard that's good. I haven't heard that one yet, but I heard it's good.
Well, we recommend Total SF as your entree into podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
There we go.
Whenever I listen to one, I like it, but I don't have any... I don't have to go to Emeryville Monday through Friday, and
well,
then I don't.
Lucky.
I'm not on a treadmill or something.
That's also lucky.
Well, our next book is Why We Swim after End of the Golden Gate.
That's a good one.
So I think that's going to be like getting us in the water. So hope to see you there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys should come. I don't know. Yeah, you have to. Well, I don't know why you wouldn't. That seems. I mean, it's so. But those clubs are so classically old school San Franciscan too. I mean, that was part of it, is that for the first 40 years of my life, I probably was by Ghirardelli Square 8 times, and now I'm there almost every day.
Wow.
Yep.
And we have another announcement.
Kevin Line One.
You know that Kevin, he's always online too. Come on, Kevin.
Get in your line.
Switch over.
So you attended San Francisco public schools growing up.
I did.
If Wikipedia is correct, which, you know, it always is,
yeah,
it was Sloat Elementary, Hoover Middle School, and Lowell High.
That's right.
That's right. And you're also a public school parent?
I am.
Yes. And the city school district and school board got international attention over the past 15 months for all the wrong reasons. And I was wondering what you think of the current state of affairs in the San Francisco public schools.
It's been really tough. I think that... I think that it's hard to picture that in this last year, if you're a cognitive and thinking person, that you wouldn't be concerned about issues of equity and race and class everywhere, but certainly in San Francisco, if that's your job. And I can't blame the school board for wanting to make some changes along those lines. I think it was really hard to hear that those changes were happening in the way that they were happening when schools were closed, because the greatest inequity issue over education right now seems to be that if, say, you're the son of a successful author, you are in like a nice quiet space on reliable internet, getting an education and getting a bunch of supplementary adventures and culture that your parents are able to provide, and many, many people had none of those things going on for a full school year, for more than a full school year.
Yeah.
And that seems to me the crucial issue of it. It's been really tough. It's been hard. I think all of us, certainly in San Francisco, I think probably all over the country, but I think in San Francisco, the kind of learning the limits of government for a lot of people, learning how exactly it works, who's in charge of what, who's doing it, who's requiring that someone else do something, all this stuff for essential services like education, I think people were learning for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was a lot of goodwill at the beginning of the pandemic for everyone.
Yeah.
And as anyone ever knows who's intruded on someone else's goodwill, that sours pretty quick. You gotta extend the goodwill with the same enthusiasm that you took the goodwill from others.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
I think that's that got point. Squandered too.
Yeah.
You've traveled all over the world. You know, are the gripes that people have in Paris, in other parts of the world, the same as the gripes that they have about San Francisco? I mean, people in San Francisco have about San Francisco.
Oh, for
this,
sure.
Is this something?
I mean, I don't think you can travel to any corner of the world without getting the feeling that it was good. It was just ruined. You've just arrived a little too late.
Because you just got here.
Yeah, it's just crumbling now. You can see the last traces of what was magical.
Well, you've survived our serious questions, and now it's time for our famous lightning round.
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay.
Heather, one thing?
Yes?
Stiff drink is not on there, and
oh,
I think we definitely need to ask the stiff drink.
It's a little early for me, but okay.
Leave that in, too.
Where is your favorite place to get a burrito?
I'm going to say El Toro, but, you know.
What's your order there, and what's special about El Toro?
My order in general always is a super veggie burrito. Black beans, and I don't like it when there's actual veggies in the veggie burrito.
Veggie burrito, yeah. All the veggies.
I like the beans in there. Well, I'm in like avocado. There's veggies that are in there, but sometimes you're like bite into like a zucchini and I think, what is going on in the world? Yeah. Someone brought me one recently. They said, I'm getting burritos. And I said, I'd love a veggie one. And they brought it and it had tofu in it.
Oh.
And I had to be like,
legal?
You're so nice for getting me a burrito, but I'm going to kill you now. and I guess I just like the vibe at El Toro. But I mean, I like, there's any kind of non-corporate feeling Mexican place is fine with me.
Yeah.
If there's like a logo that's been worked on, then I'm suspicious of it.
What is your favorite movie filmed in San Francisco?
I'm going to remember. I'm going to think of like a cooler one 20 minutes later. This is the opposite of the lightning round, I realize. This is the slug round. I'm going to have to go Vertigo, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a popular choice.
Yeah. I live right near its apartments now, and it was once a hospital, and it is used as the mental hospital in Vertigo, where Barbara Delgettes walks out of the movie, basically, which is one of my favorite moments in cinema, where she says, like, yeah, I'm all done. And you don't see her again. She walks down this long hallway that they filmed on location, and she's out of the movie, which you don't see, except in Death. You don't see, major characters don't walk out of movies much. Yeah, and one of my novels stole that from the structure, because at the end of the first half of Vertigo, you do not know what is going to happen next.
Sarah, 31, please. Sarah, 31.
Sarah, 31.
I love that in this question, when Heather asks about movies, if it's a politician, they have that added thing where it's going through their head, what answer is the right answer that's going to get me the most votes among senior citizens in District 3?
Right.
You know, so there's a longer pause there.
Yeah. I have a fictional movie that my friend and I talk about, because we were at a political meeting many, many years ago, and somebody said, I'm not sure how this is going to play with the blue-haired ladies of the sunset. And then there was a bunch of people from out of town who were like, who are the blue-haired ladies of the sunset? I think they pictured like some kind of mutant motorcycle gang. And then I was like, oh, that would be a great movie. Like the blue-haired ladies of the sunset.
It'd be a great name for a band like playing at Bottom of the Hill. Like,
yeah.
Like the third band on the list.
Yeah, I wonder what the blue-haired, I can't spell it out, B-H-L... O-T-S. Doesn't really spell anything.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if it did.
Yeah. So, thanks for the reminder. Where's your favorite place in the city to get a stiff drink?
Zam Zam.
Good choice.
Yeah.
What was your first concert?
I'm assuming we're not talking about, like, the San Francisco Symphony. That was definitely my real first concert. But if we're talking about the wonders of pop music...
Probably.
It would be Men at Work with Mental as Anything opening for them at the Greek.
Oh, fun.
Wow,
I love the
good
Greek.
Good one.
Yeah.
Good one.
What was the last book you read?
The Old Child by Jenny Urbanek.
Besides yourself, who is your favorite San Francisco writer?
besides myself?
Implying that
I'm rejecting the premise of that question. Besides myself. Who's contributed the most in society? Besides you, of course. It's like all the people who secretly voted themselves most popular in high school. I think I am. I am. I mean, I like me, so... Well, are we talking about the quality of text? This is it's another tough one. I mean, I would have to say, like Gertrude Stein, if San Francisco could claim her, which is a little iffy, but I would say Gertrude Stein in terms of someone who I just love, and I love that they came from here and things like that. But then Andrew Sean Greer is one of my best friends in the world, so I in fact just texted him before I entered this bookstore. Ooh. So he's like my favorite.
Is he the one you're meeting at the bookstore later?
No, he's in Italy right now. Oh. But I took a picture of a thing I had for breakfast at Ashley's Cafe, which he likes to.
Cool.
And said, miss you.
Aww. You've played the accordion for decades, and I read somewhere that you picked up the instrument to pick up women. What is your best song on the accordion?
Well... I would say what I wanted to be in a band, and I had taken piano lessons in my life, and I had played like keyboards in like high school jazz band and stuff. But when I was in college, I wanted to be in a band, and it was this weird moment in the late 80s where keyboards were not cool at all because everything had to be authentic, man, and keyboards are fake. So I bought myself an accordion, and the first band I was in was like very, we wanted to sound like Cowboy Junkies. So then the joke is that because you would only be in a band to pick up women, you would join. Yeah. So it wasn't like I said, you know what ladies love? But I am married now, so it worked. I bought it at Columbo Brothers Accordion Company, which used to be in Marin. And, oh, my best song? I do a pretty good version of When Doves Cry.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Which is also an easy song, in my arrangement, an easy song to learn. So a few times when I've been like on a radio or show or something, whether it's a band on stage or something like that, we can do it like without rehearsing.
Wow.
I can just say, these are the chords, go. And so that's a pretty good, that's like a good thing to have in your pocket.
Yeah.
I think we still have a virtual event coming up.
How
awesome would it be if when people are getting seated or turning on their Zoom or whatever, they're just hearing an accordion version of When Doves Cry coming in.
What are you saying?
Well, how much does something like that pay?
I
mean,
I'll buy you a book at Green Apple.
I'm just striking justice for all musicians everywhere. I want everyone to understand that I'm in solidarity with them. I'm in. There's probably a few YouTubes of me doing When Doves Cry. And also it's a surprising song to come out of an accordion. And sometimes you can start it, and because you're not expecting it, it'll take you a little bit to figure out what it is that I'm singing. So, nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
By the way, everybody, you can still sign up for our August 24th virtual event with the library, during which Daniel Handler will play When Doves Cry on the accordion.
Guaranteed.
Yeah. And Heather will belly dance?
No. That would not happen.
Yeah.
If you can wave.
Peter said something about bird invitations. I didn't hear the whole thing, but it's going to be quite an evening, ladies and gentlemen. You can't drag me into playing Prince if I can't drag you into doing
something
else.
We have it recorded now. You said yes. I read that you created the name Lemony Snicket before writing a series of unfortunate events so you could use the name to get your own name off of mailing lists.
Yeah, I was on the phone with a right-wing political organization. I was doing research for my novel, The Basic Eight, which takes place at a fictional version of Lowell. And I wanted them to send me some material, but I was worried about being on their mailing list. So that was the name that I blurted out. And then some friends of mine got me some business cards that said Lemony Snicket. And so that was a big... We would go to... Latin American Social Club and Dr. Bombay's and Zam Zam, and I would give them out to people. And I would write cranky letters to like the Knob Hill
Gazette.
A Gazette and the Parkside Express and other local newspapers. That was a big thing. I was always trying to get the name in print.
Yeah.
But and it never worked. But I, you know, and I would write furious letters to the editor that I'm sure I don't have to remind journalists.
You never get those.
I would, you know, I would look, I would find the most harmless article in these newspapers, and it was never the Chronicle or anything like that. It was always the tiny little newspapers. I'd find the most harmless article, and then I would write an enraged letter about some detail in it. And the rule was that they all started with the sentence, "How dare you?" And then they ended with Lemony Snicket.
Did you learn this from Quentin Kopp?
No, but I mean, I knew quite a few journalists over the years. And and maybe this is more of a San Franciscan thing, and I don't know, but there's something about the mix of a steadfast public commitment and a complete eye-rolling attitude towards almost every member of the public that I feel every good reporter has. Where they're like, I'm here for every single person. Do not call me on the goddamn phone. I don't want to talk to you.
Heather and I are now having this, like, we're like, oh my God, is Quentin Kopp and all these letters we've been getting, the swirly cursive thing, just like performance art?
Maybe. Like it's some 38-year-old guy. Maybe that's not his real name.
Oh boy. Rabbit hole.
If you could wave a magic wand and change one thing about San Francisco, what would it be?
This really is like one of those questions where you have to choose between selfishness and social justice, right?
Yeah.
Financial equity for all, but also like Tom King clothes. So we only want that place open. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not good with a magic wand. I just, okay. I don't know. I'd give the magic wand to someone more trustworthy.
What's your perfect day in San Francisco?
Ooh. Attention, Green Apple employees. We have a box moving party for the front to receiving.
I should go help them with that box. Box moving party.
Party.
That sounds like fun. A box moving party.
Well, you're new here. Yeah. It's a party, everyone. Yeah, that's how your friends get you to move. I'll buy you a pizza. Pizza? You're like, wait a minute. I'm a grown man. I don't need pizza.
Box moving party? I get paid for this?
Yeah. I get paid to party. I'm sorry. What was the question? I forgot.
What's your perfect day in San Francisco, not counting a box moving party?
Yeah, that would have to be the best. I mean, swimming in the morning. I mean, it's kind of days that I get a lot. Swimming in the morning. I like, there's some good cafes that I like to work in. I'm not going to name them because they're good to work in, and I don't, then people take them over when I mm-hmm. talk about them. Mm-hmm. And maybe a good banh mi.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be good. Yeah, a walk someplace to see something pretty. A drink at Zam Zam.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe like a good, I'm trying to think of what I have for dinner. Maybe just like Porto Alegre. Get like some good enchiladas. And then I would say like a 10:30 showing of a Val Lewton movie at the Castro. That'd be great.
Sounds fun.
It sounds fun.
Yeah. See you there.
Last question. What is something you always make sure to squeeze into your busy day?
Reading, I guess.
Yeah.
I always make sure. There's not a day goes by when I don't read something mm-hmm. that is literature and good for me.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Well, then it was great we met here.
Yeah. Exactly. It's good to get it out early. Then the rest of the day, I can just wander around watching TV.
Well, thank you so much. It was really fun to talk to you. Maybe the funniest guest we have had on Totalist.
See you at the event. Can't wait for the belly dancing. That's going to be so awesome.
When doves cry on the accordion.
Book moving party. We're adding a book moving party. Thank you.
All literary events should be a book moving party. People should be buying them.
Yes.
Thank you.
You are listening to the San Francisco Chronicle. Thank you to Heather Knight. Our music is The Tide Will Rise by the Sunset Shipwrecks off their album Community, and Cable Car Bell Ringing by 8-time champion Byron Cobb. Support Total SF in the newsroom that creates it, and consider getting a digital Chronicle edition. It's less expensive than you think at sfchronicle.com/pod.